From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature and a news roundup from your state university. If its library is the heart of every educational institution, as so often has been said, then the University of Alaska shows clear indications of an increasingly strong and healthy heartbeat. Some of the indications are immediately apparent because they show in the physical sense. Others are hidden behind the scenes, and they are apparent only through their effect, according to Director of Libraries, Mr. Ted Ryberg. For instance, the creation of a public document collection brings together in one location government publications and their indexes in the main library at College. In September, the circulation system was changed to a system using MacB-edged punch cards. This will accommodate the future expansion of the university book collection and their use, while also affecting significant economies in time and money. To enable catalogers to catch up on a backlog of unprocessed books and acquisitions of collections, a percentage of the library book orders are being processed through a special outside service this year. And at the same time, the library is reclassifying all materials from the Dewey Decimal System to the more flexible Library of Congress system, which is in use in most major university and research libraries in the country. In October, the library broke all previous records for book acquisitions by adding 1,400 volumes to the collections, bringing the total to about 100,000 volumes at the University of Alaska Library. A newly established archives and manuscript collection, housed in a special room, includes records of the university, original historical source material about Alaska, and a number of special collections. This material is put into special acid-free file folders, which are then kept in specially designed archive boxes. These boxes are dust-proof and vermin-proof. Alaskans who have any historical material relating to Alaska or to the university are encouraged by Mr. Ryberg to deposit them at the university library, where they will be well taken care of and will be available for research purposes. The primary problems in the university library are space and, of course, funds to bring the collection up to the proper level to give the undergraduate, graduate, and research programs the proper support. Director Ryberg said, however, in spite of problems, great progress is apparent, and the heartbeat will continue to quicken. Many Alaskans probably do not realize that the University of Alaska's Choir of the North has an excellent reputation in national music fields. The choir is busy during this pre-holiday season rehearsing and recording two 15-minute programs of Christmas music to be broadcast over Alaska's radio stations. And the 100-member choir, along with the 50-member university orchestra, will present the Messiah next Sunday at the university, and the choir will also be presenting programs to various organizations in the Fairbanks area and in interior Alaska. On December 15, the choir will be the guest of the United States Army at Fort Greely. There it will present a live television program. Short courses in fisheries will be offered to Alaska communities and commercial fisheries groups this winter by the university's Division of Statewide Services. The course offers information of fishing gear and materials, information on fisheries technology, fish spoilage and handling, and on other special topics. They are available January 4th through May 31st. Classes are held at 2 or 3 hours a night for 5 nights each week, and a fee of $10 per student is charged. Groups or communities interested should write the Fisheries Extension, University of Alaska, at College. In 1967, as Alaska celebrates the 100th anniversary of its purchase from Russia, the University of Alaska will celebrate its 50th year as Alaska's state university. In 1917, the territorial legislature accepted a land grant from the United States and created the Alaska Agricultural College and School of Mines. From this very modest beginning, the University of Alaska has grown to be a world-renowned institution of higher education and research. A special committee is now planning for the golden anniversary in 1967. And that's it for this week, a brief feature roundup of events at your state university, produced by the Office of University Relations and recorded at radio station KUAC. Was elected to the Executive Committee of the Northwest Association of Secondary and Higher Schools at a meeting of this association in Portland. The association is composed of a group of universities with the goal of maintaining high standards in higher education. The university has been a member and accredited by the association
since 1935. In London last week, the Royal Society, England's oldest scientific society, awarded its highest honor to a University of Alaska faculty member. Dr. Sidney Chapman, advisory scientific director of the university's Geophysical Institute, received the Copley Medal, which is awarded annually. It's awarded to an outstanding living author of philosophical research. Dr. Chapman, who has been a fellow of the society since 1919, spends part of each year at the university conducting research and lecturing. He is considered an authority in several areas of geophysics and is the author of more than 400 scientific papers and 5 books. He has served as president of 5 national and 3 international scientific societies and was president of the international committee that planned and directed the International Geophysical Year. Dr. James Morrow, professor of fisheries biology at the university, has been asked to present an important scientific paper at the annual meeting of the American Association for the Advancement of Science. The meeting will be held in Montreal, Canada, late this month. Dr. Morrow's paper will concern wilderness fisheries research problems on the Upper Yukon River in Alaska. He stresses the importance of acquiring as much information as possible on unexploited resources so that in the face of a population explosion in the United States, we can better assess the effects of man-made changes. 25 paintings, many of them portraits of Alaskans, are on exhibit in the University Commons for 2 weeks. The paintings are the work of Enid Cutler, wife of the university's academic vice president, Dr. Howard Cutler. Mrs. Cutler received a Master of Fine Arts degree from the University of Iowa, where she studied under some of America's finest artists. The colorful University of Alaska's 45-member concert band is presenting its first performance of the season this week on the campus. Under the direction of Professor Robert L. Farley, the band will present contemporary and traditional music, including Tippecanoe Quickstep, composed in 1840, 3 interludes from Music for a Festival, by contemporary composer Gordon Jacob, and various Christmas selections in keeping with the season. 2 other major concerts are planned for later this school year. If any of the faculty or students on campus had forgotten that Christmas isn't far in the future, they are now finding it very easy to remember. A tall spruce tree near the door of the Eielson building blossomed out this week with Christmas lights and other traditional decorations. Its location makes it an inviting focal point for anyone walking across campus, and its snow-laden limbs add a most festive atmosphere. There are many other indications of the coming season on campus, too, this week. In Wickersham Hall, Women's Residence Hall, guests were welcomed to an open house Sunday, and they were greeted with a theme of Christmas decorations and, of course, many lovely student residents. Friday, December 11, actually heralds the Christmas social season for students with the 5th annual Christmas Ball. It's a formal affair this year with music provided by a popular Alaska orchestra, The Counts. The annual Christmas Ball for faculty and staff and their guests has been set for December 26. It also is a formal occasion which is considered a social highlight of each school year. Joseph Langland, famed poet and author, presented the first program in the university's special events series Saturday. His subject, One Contemporary Vice. It was a discussion of the present direction of modern poetry. Mr. Langland also read from his own works, and on Sunday he met informally with students and faculty members. And that's it for the week. This Is Your University is a weekly roundup of feature and news events at the University of Alaska. It is produced by the Office of University Relations and recorded with the cooperation of University Radio Station KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature and news roundup from your state university. Many Alaskans are fascinated by the university's muskox herd and the special project which centers around it. Professor John J. Teal, Jr., supervisor of the project, probably knows more about these nearly extinct prehistoric animals than any person in the world. And he's just as fascinated as the next man. The shaggy animals, which Newsweek magazine called genial critters that taste good, give a lot of wool, and like inhospitable climates, reside in a specially built corral on the north end of the university campus. The 23 genial critters with a shaggy outer hair and thick undercoat of fine wool are partial to severe weather. They were extremely happy last week as temperatures in the Fairbanks area dropped to 55 degrees below zero, Teal said. Although they didn't move around much, they preferred to save their energy to generate heat. The muskox domestication started on Nunavak Island last October when Professor Teal and his helpers rounded up the first group. The men used methods ranging from Western-style roping to professional football-type tackles. The second lesson in becoming genial was given to these interesting animals when a rather bumpy ride in an airplane from Nunavak to Anchorage and then onto the campus gave them quite a thrill. Since then, with the understanding care of Professor Teal and his young muskox herders, the young animals now take their formula twice a day from gallon buckets equipped with large nipples. For recreation, they play a rough-and-tumble game with a medicine ball, and some of them even follow one of their young herders around the corral like playful puppies. The latest episode in their domestication was played last week when the Alaska Schmooze, as some of their friends call them playfully, were dehorned. The operation, which was plenty wild and woolly, was supervised by Dr. Gordon Kuhn. Dr. Kuhn is chief of the Department of Large Animal Surgery at Washington State Veterinary College. The dehorning job was necessary to keep the playful animals from harming one another during recreation periods, which are quite often. Careful preparations preceded the operation, for the muskoxen are intelligent animals, and they're not so easily fooled. So John Teal and his associates designed two escape-proof chutes. The animals entered the chutes with all the gentleness of a runaway express train. Once stopped in the first chute, the muskoxen were weighed. Average weights of the herd ran around 230 pounds, Teal said. But these are only six-month-old animals. When grown, the males will weigh about 1,000 pounds, and the females about 750. After the weighing-in process, each animal entered another chute. The nerves were deadened. Then one of the herders climbed on the animal's back to help hold it still while the actual dehorning operation took place. About 30 minutes was required for each animal. After the operation, Teal said, the muskoxen seemed to be even more docile. In fact, John called them with a sly grin, little balls of fluff. Well, these little balls of fluff look somewhat like a buffalo, only smaller, and each one has the longest hair of any animal in America. The hair varies from about 6 inches on the back to 2 feet on the neck and on the chest and sides. This skirt of its coat is usually ankle length and may even brush the ground. Massive horns curve down, then out, then up, and an exceptional set of horns may have a spread of 28 to 29 inches. It's easy to understand why the herd has been dehorned. The primary purpose of the muskoxen project is to determine the feasibility of raising them for commercial use in Alaska. Their fine wool undercoat is considered by textile experts as one of the finest fibers in the world, even finer than cashmere. And a muskox steak, so they say, makes a mouth-watering dish. If the project determines that these interesting animals can be domesticated and used commercially, it can lead to an entirely new industry for many of northern Alaska's natives. And that's it for the week. This is Your University as a weekly news and feature roundup about Your University of Alaska. It is produced by the Office of University Relations and recorded at University Radio Station KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature and news roundup from your state university. The campus is quiet this week. Hundreds of students and many faculty members left over the weekend to spend Christmas with families in almost every part of Alaska, and some in other states. The holiday vacation started Friday evening and will end on Monday, January 4. Many students will no doubt use the free time to write term papers, catch up on back reading, and study. Many more have said they plan to loaf and rest up for the final exams, which start on January 13th. For those remaining on the campus, whether for work or rest, there are many activities to help make the season a pleasant one. The university collegiate-sized swimming pool is open daily. There are movies 5 days each week. There's a special tea honoring international students and faculty. The Seroptimus Club are sponsoring a Christmas Eve party for students. And, of course, the snack bar in the Student Union Building is open, serving coffee, snacks, and conversation. So the campus city is quieter this week, but still busy. Haben Sie die Hausaufgabe? Well, if you speak German, please don't criticize the pronunciation. I don't. Translated, however, with accent and all, it means, do you have your homework? From the moment a student walks into his German class at the University of Alaska and is asked if he has his homework, all conversation follows the same pattern, strictly German. Is this an upper division class in foreign languages? No, it's a first semester course. While the method may have seemed improbable a few years ago, it has become the accepted form of teaching a foreign language in most universities and colleges. Dr. Bruce Gordon, head of the Department of Linguistics and Foreign Languages at the university, describes the method in one word, saturation. Here's how it works. The student first hears the correct model of a phrase or a group of words given by the instructor or on a tape recording. He imitates short conversations with commonly used expressions. Then he commits them to memory. The linguistic patterns are drilled into him daily by various pattern drills designed to make the student's response automatic. The objective is to be able to express thoughts easily and almost without thinking how to do it. This is the way a person speaks his own native language. He doesn't have to think how to say something, but what to say. The system is known as the audiolingual method. It's a form of teaching which has its roots in World War II and contrasts greatly from the formerly used analytical method, where heavy emphasis is placed on grammar transposed from the native tongue to the foreign language. In short, under the audiolingual method, the student learns the language itself instead of about the language. In the past two decades, Dr. Gordon explains, the world has shrunk. Americans daily come into contact with foreign people, so teachers of foreign languages have had to realize that they must revolutionize their teaching approach. This year, language students at the university work in groups. By next fall, the university hopes to have a fully equipped language laboratory in operation. It will be a versatile laboratory with a main installation and possibly booths in residence halls, in the library, the Student Union building, and other places on campus. The booths will be connected to the laboratory by telephone cables so that students can practice at other locations around the campus by merely dialing the exercise they want. This type of laboratory can remain constantly in operation around the clock with a minimum of supervision. The constant practice so necessary to achieving fluency in a language is made easy by the method. And the student can record his own voice speaking the language, play it back, listen to his progress. Then he can listen to the instructor using the correct method, practice more until he perfects his lesson. The ability to speak a foreign language is becoming more and more important. For persons who speak more than one language, many jobs are available in both government and in business. The University of Alaska is keeping pace with the changing world. And now, from University of Alaska President Dr. William R. Wood, the faculty, and professional staff at the university, we wish you a most joyous holiday season. This Is Your University is produced weekly by the Office of University Relations and recorded by University of Alaska radio station, KUAC. From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature and news roundup from your state university. The overall mission of a modern university is complex, with many specific goals. One of these lies in the commitment to the advancement of knowledge, to the discovery of new knowledge through specialized techniques summed up in the word research. The geographical location at the University of Alaska offers research opportunities not found at any other American university and in few places in the world. As our research institutes probe deeply into many frontiers of knowledge, one has carved an international reputation, the Geophysical Institute of the University of Alaska. The Geophysical Institute was born in 1948 when the Board of Regents of the university authorized land for it on campus. In 1950, its present building was completed, and it has since experienced constant expansion. The roster of staff at the institute contains names of many scientists known throughout the world. Many more internationally known scientists visit the institute each year to participate in spatial research, to teach, and to observe. The major factor in the Institute's phenomenal growth is its favorable location in the auroral zone. Its work is broadening in scope each year, but the study of auroral zone phenomena continues to be the prime task and the prime responsibility of the Institute. The Institute is located 100 miles south of the center of the auroral zone. This is the region where charged particles ejected from the sun tend to produce their maximum influences, causing such phenomena as the aurora, or, as we know, the Northern Lights. It causes magnetic storms, intense absorption of radio waves, ionospheric disturbances, polar blackouts, and disruption of radio communications.
In recent years, the research program has expanded into new fields because of the interests of the staff and the need for other types of high-latitude investigation. A program of glaciology is well established, and certain aspects of meteorology are currently being studied. For instance, the characteristics of frozen and unfrozen ground, snow accumulation, characteristics of glacial and sea ice, local air movement, and one that is particularly interesting to many Fairbanks in this past week, ice fog problems. Also, to take advantage of the location in a seismic and volcanic region, programs of seismology and volcanology are underway. The Institute's work takes its creative researchers to many corners of our state. Optical equipment for studying the aurora and the air glow, all-sky cameras, spectrographs, and photometers are all installed on Esther Dome near Fairbanks. The Institute maintains field sites at Fort Yukon and Healy. A site at Cold Bay in the Aleutian Chain has been used often during the past few years for spatial monitoring during high-altitude nuclear tests in the Pacific. During the International Geophysical Year, members operated equipment at Barrow, at Kotzebue, Bettles, Shaw Creek, Big Delta, Farewell, Northway, King Salmon, and at Unalaska. Snow accumulation measurements have been made on the top of Mount Wrangell, a 14,000-foot site which has also been used for cosmic ray investigation. In connection with international studies, the Institute has established stations in other parts of the world, such as Oamaru in the South Island of New Zealand, Macquarie Island in the South Pacific, and on the Boothia Peninsula of northern Canada. It also has a program of observations conducted on the National Science Foundation ship Eltonen, which cruises the South Atlantic, the South Pacific, and in Antarctic waters. One Institute scientist, Dr. Victor Hessler, is presently in the Antarctic. Although most of the Institute's observational program is ground-based, rocket and balloon soundings are also made and coordinated jointly with other scientific groups. Rockets have been fired this year from Fort Churchill, Canada, for auroral observations, and also from Fort Greely, Alaska. The creative pursuit of knowledge through research, however, is not the only responsibility of the Institute. Graduate instruction is also an important mission, and many of the senior staff devote part of their time to teaching in various university departments. As we enter a new year, the Geophysical Institute and the other research institutes of the university continue to search the frontiers of knowledge to serve the citizens of Alaska and to better serve all the citizens of the world. And that's all for this week. This Is Your University is a weekly feature about your University of Alaska. It is produced by the Office of University Relations and recorded at University of Alaska radio station, KUAC.
From the University of Alaska campus at College, this is Bob Olson with a weekly feature and news story from your state university. The University of Alaska's Museum of the North grasps the imagination of young and old alike. A visitor steps through the door and is suddenly face to face with an ominous-looking Kodiak bear, 9 feet tall, standing upright and greeting each new visitor with a haughty stare. He's stuffed and mounted, of course, but he nevertheless sets the stage for the wonderment and the fascination to follow as visitors wander through the exhibits, glimpsing into Alaska's historic and prehistoric past. This giant brownie, which weighed over 1,500 pounds when he was shot in 1950, is but one of the many exhibits of natural history in the museum. He is joined by caribou, by reindeer and bison, moose, musk oxen, wolverines, foxes, lynx, and sea otter, and many more animals from Alaska's past and present. In the paleontology exhibit, visitors are taken more than 14,000 years into the past as they gaze at the skull and bones of a woolly mammoth. Gold mining operations in interior Alaska have uncovered most of the Alaskan Pleistocene Age remains that are known today, and radiocarbon tests place the age at a minimum of 14,000 years. The powerful jets of water that cleared away the muck from gold-bearing gravel uncovered many tons of these bones. Most common were the remains of the super bison, the moose and the caribou, the prehistoric horse, and thousands of smaller animals, such as rabbits and mice. These Pleistocene animals lived in a climate and environment much the same as that of interior Alaska today, contrary to most opinion. The museum began as a few showcases of artifacts exhibited in 1922. They were in the office of Dr. Charles E. Bunnell, the university's first president. Major collections of archaeological materials on St. Lawrence Island and Pleistocene fossils in interior Alaska were contributed by Dr. Otto Geist. They became the foundation of the present museum. The museum is a unit of the University of Alaska and it serves its students and research workers as a storehouse of reference materials. Its exhibits are also provided for the students and for the enjoyment of the general public. The museum is one of Alaska's greatest tourist attractions, too, probably giving more people an authentic lesson in Alaska history than any other Alaska attraction. More than 30,000 people visited the museum last year. They came from 170 Alaska towns and villages, from 45 foreign nations, from all of the United States and U.S. possessions. A visit to the University Museum is a highlight of the school year for Fairbanks area students, who are provided with conducted tours in their classes. The museum's exhibits are designed to give a graphic picture of Alaska's heritage. There are exhibits of prehistoric Indians and Eskimo artifacts. They depict various stages in the culture and development of Alaska natives. An extensive collection from St. Lawrence Island gives evidence of prehistoric culture more than 2,000 years old. The clothing and tools, the boats and sleds, weapons of Alaska's Aboriginal peoples are all exhibited. An Eskimo puppet from Point Hope rests in a glass case, as if waiting for New Year's Eve to perform an ancient dance. These almost life-sized puppets were carefully stored throughout the year by their Eskimo owners until the eve of each new year. Then they were manipulated in a joyful ceremonial dance called Choyaklaka. A complete set of 27 lithographs by Alaskan artist Fred Mokitons hangs in the building, a lasting record in oils and lithograph of everyday aspects of Alaskan life. Many items depict Alaska under the Russian rule of 1741 to 1867. Tools, implements, and household goods from these days of exploitation. Harpoons from the years when Alaska was the whaling center of the world. Many exhibits from the raucous gold rush days which put Alaska into the eyes of the world. And more than 100,000 items which cannot be exhibited because of a lack of space. The University of Alaska Museum is a collection of awe and wonderment. It's maintained for Alaskans and Alaska's visitors. We hope that in this new year of 1965, you too can visit the museum and the campus of your state university at college. You will be welcome. And that's all for this week. This Is Your University is produced weekly by the Office of University Relations and recorded at University of Alaska Radio Station, KUAC.